daily for the physics. And to prove supersymmetric and Meuton computer, there are several technical issues. And it can be resolved, in fact, but to understand what is the problem and how it can be resolved, we have to understand three basic keywords: exact symmetry, relativity function, and parameter function. And I start with warm-up examples, bosonic fermion wells with Wilson's bracket axiomatically, and chiral symmetry in QCD. From these two examples, we can understand why exact symmetry is important. And then we proceed to finance. And I show numerical results for one-dimensional theory today. And tomorrow I explain how to put two-dimensional, three-dimensional, and four-dimensional experiments on computer. This case is a bit technical, but the one-dimensional case is really simple. So let's start with pure bosonic Fermion theory. So this is a well-known Plunkett action. So we have lattice. So there are many sides, and the gate field is represented by main variable, which is unitary, and it corresponds to usual Hermitian gate field by exponential I times A, this is lattice spacing here, times A mu, this is it. And this link variable is living on the link. Okay. U mu x means a link variable starting with point x in the direction of mu. And this action is simply trace of product of 4 mu along this direction, around this bracket. And by substituting this form in this action, and by assuming that A, lattice spacing times A mu, is small, that means value of the gate field is much smaller than a cutoff scale, one way. We get this formula, this action, which is what we want as continuum action. And by putting this action on computer, we can perform the simulation. So if we also introduce IR cutoff, we only have finitely many fields. Then this action has several exact symmetries already at discretized level. So it has gauge symmetry. So u mu of x is transformed like this. So here omega is a gauge transformation at point x. And there are gauge transformation parameters at each side. And this u mu is transformed by omega here and omega here. So this is just a little gauge symmetry, and it also has 90 degree rotation, and it also has discrete translation, just a shift of one elasticity, and also it has charge conjugation and parity, which is needed for the amnesia. Then, when we take continuum limit, because these symmetries are exact at the discretized level, it should be respected in the continuum limit. Then, thanks to these exact symmetries, continuum limit is gauge invariant, translational invariant, rotational invariant, and so on. But what happens if the gauge symmetry is explicitly, not spontaneously broken, already at large size level? Or when we use stupid regularization like sharp momentum cutoff. Then Because we are interested in low energy, long distance physics. Here, long distance means long distance compared to large spacing. So we integrate out high frequency mock and consider effective action at a long distance scale. But then if gauge symmetry is not respected at UV scale, gauge symmetry breaking gradient depression can appear because it's not forbidden by symmetry. So in continuum theory is naively not gauge invariant at all. So to kill them, one has to add counter terms to the action at UV scale. Then in principle, we can restore gauge symmetry at long distance scale, but that coefficient must be fine-tuned. And it's really hard to determine that coefficients. What we have to do is basically we consider, we introduce general form of counter terms and take a coefficient to be, we have to scan the parameter space of coefficients and must find right point which at which gauge symmetry is restored. But that's really hard because we have to introduce many coefficients. We have to scan all parameter space. That's in practice impossible. So this is fine tuning problem. So if we don't respect symmetries of continuum theory at a discretized level, fine tuning problem arises, and then it's impossible. In practice, it's impossible to put it on computer. And famous or notorious example is fermion and Hadamard symmetry. So in QCD, in chiral limit, we have chiral symmetry, chiral plane symmetry, and the U1 part is anomalous. And this term is important because spontaneous breakdown of this term distorts some codon, which is pion. And also, at massless, in the chiral limit, this symmetry will be the quark master. So if we don't respect this symmetry at the discretized level, fermion mass is not forbidden. And by radiative correction, fermion can become very heavy. But we want to have light fermion. So this symmetry is really important. And why this kind of symmetry is difficult to realize on that, this is really easy to understand. So for example, if we can keep color symmetry, namely one expects gamma 5d plus d gamma 5 equals to 0. But if we can achieve it on lattice, then this U1 actual part, which must be anomalous, cannot be anomalous if we can regularize the theory keeping this property. So this cannot be achieved. And in Wilson fermion, this symmetry is expressive law. But at the same time, because this equation itself fails, this SUNF symmetry, which we want to keep, is also broken. And in so for this part, Wilson type fermions, modified type of chiral symmetry. So here on the right hand side, there's a parameter A, which is lattice spacing. And when A is sent to 0, it's almost the same as gamma 5d, but the gamma 5 goes to 0. But there is a subtle difference. And thanks to that, thanks to this modified symmetry, this part appears, and also anomaly for U1 part is also arise from this modification.
This modified chiral symmetry. So that's exact in little
a. Exact on lattice, yeah. But it's different from this relation itself.
Sure.
So that can, explain anomaly right. And the exact symmetry.
Right. And there is no further a squared a cube directions then.
No. So this one is written in this way. So detail of the form is not important. Anyway, here Biermann's parameter appears. But looking at this formula, even when you put Biermann's to be zero, when you have about this kappa to be followed by A. Hilbert symmetry is indivisible. If when bare mass is zero, right? When bare mass is zero, naively we expect in continuum action, we naively expect that Hilbert symmetry is restored, but in this case, no. So, related correction gives cutoff scale mass. So one has to fine-tune copper so that the denormalized mass becomes small. And that's what people do in lattice QCD simulation.
Can you explain just a bit more where this formula comes from, like this relation between kappa and the square mass?
So this U is exponential I times lattice space times gauge field. So you can expand this action in power of slightly spacing A and just take leading order. Then you get psi by deep psi. That's it.
If I put kappa exactly as omega the mass, then probably zero.
Yes. For example, if you take this kappa to be 1 over 8, okay, then. And basically, this U is 1 plus small quantity. Okay, then, so here there are 2 1s. Okay, so there are 2 times psi, basically. And then you have 4 directions. So 8 times psi by psi appears. Okay, and this kappa is 1 by 8. So this term and the term cancels. Like that. And then it's easy to see. Naive continuum action is restored.
Why are you writing kappa in this particular form? I mean, if you are matching only to within more than 1 over A.
There are other choices, in fact.
Okay.
And it's just my favorite.
Okay. So it should happen anyways.
Right. But shouldn't the mass be. Why is the mass in the denominator?
Well, he's going to expand it. What he said.
Because it's 8 and 0.
Right,
okay.
Yeah,
sure.
And so I was asking why does he write?
Okay, that's the question, okay. But anyway, so in order to study chiral symmetry breakdown, for example, it's a dynamical effect, so analytically it's really hard to reproduce from QCD, so people want to use it. People want to check the chiral symmetry breakdown using lattice, but for that, chiral symmetry must be exact symmetry. So if the chiral symmetry is broken explicitly only at UV scale, there is no way to argue spontaneous breakdown. So philosophical phenomena is not appropriate for such kind of physics. So if you want to study such physics, then we have to use Ginsberg Wilson phenomena. And some people really try that, and spontaneous chiral symmetry breakdown was confirmed by using Ginsberg Wilson phenomena. And in our case, we want to study supersymmetry. And then, if we explicitly break supersymmetry, then we cannot argue, for example, spontaneous breakdown of supersymmetry. And also, we need fine tuning if we don't respect SUSY at UV scale naively.
Can I ask you a question about, I know it's probably not directly related to what you were doing. So when those people found the spontaneous breaking of chiral symmetry, is that the way, so they turned on a small mass and then they tuned the mass to zero and they saw what's the
difference? Yes. Basically what they did is, so they, of course at massless level, it's really hard to perform simulation.
Right.
So they took several values of mass, I think, and extrapolated to massless limit. And they compare the result with kind of random metric theory, which should be equivalent to QCD if kind of symmetry is broken. And they found the agreement. Okay, so if we can keep supersymmetry exactly on lattice, we are happy. We can do the same. But unfortunately, we can easily find normal theorem for lattice. It's really easy. So Suzy algebra contains infinitesimal translation. Okay, and the computer of Q algebra is derivative. But infinitesimal translation is explicitly broken on lattice by construction. Right? Because lattice has this structure. So it is impossible to keep all supercharges exactly on lattice because of this property. But still, it is possible to preserve a part of supercharges which does not contain derivative. So our strategy is like this. If you remember the example of free bosonic EMLs, for example, rotational symmetry or translational symmetry is not fully respected. Only discrete subgroup was respected, but that's enough to constrain continuum theory. In our case, again, we can keep only a few exact supercharges, but if that supercharge is strong enough to forbid Suzy breaking relative correction, we can take continuum limit state. And whether it works or not depends on the dimension. So one dimensional case, 0 plus 1 dimensional case, is really special because it is UV-finite. Because there is no UV divergence, we don't have to introduce lattice at all. So we have to keep exact symmetry because Suzy breaking correction appears through radiative correction. And that's kind of right because field theory in general has divergences, and we have to control divergences, keeping symmetries. But one dimensional theory does not have divergence. So we don't have to use lattice, and actually just fixing gauge, and by introducing momentum capital, we can put it on computer. And in two dimensions, UV divergence appears, so we have to be careful. And in this case, Cohen, Kaplan, Katz and Unzel have shown that they can keep a part of supersymmetry exactly on lattice. And the two all-order perturbation theory, it's enough to forbid all Suzy breaking corrections. In fact, in addition to supersymmetry, they keep part of R-symmetry, and they also use that. But anyways, that's enough to give guided expression to all of the perturbation. And whether it works, non-patternable is not a trivial issue, but by explicit simulation, we can check. It really works. And I will explain that tomorrow. And in three dimensions, similarly, Kaplan and Unzel constructed lattice action, which keeps part of supersymmetry and R-symmetry. And Mikat Unzel says he tried a similar argument to two-dimensional case, and in the case of maximal supersymmetry, he could show that fine-tuning is not needed, at least to all of the perturbations. But that work is not published. I just trust him, but I don't know the detail. And in four-dimensional case, if we consider only four-dimensional n equals to 1 pure supermills without any matter field, we can use chiral U1R symmetry. That symmetry can be kept on lattice. And then that forbids gauge inomass. But gauge inomass is the only possibly dangerous parameter which can break supersymmetry in continuum limit. So in this case, at last size level, so we don't keep supersymmetry, but rather we keep U1R symmetry. Then in continuum limit, supersymmetry is restored thanks to that additional different symmetry. That's the idea of the pattern. But once we add matter field, okay, we cannot forbid spot mass. Then fine tuning is needed. And in four dimension, we can get part of the supersymmetry, but that's not strong enough to forbid squawk master. So only for pure Young Mills, lattice combination can work without fine tuning. That's the status. So in this case, we use hybrid formulation. Here, by hybrid, I mean lattice technique plus fuzzy sphere. Tomorrow I explain in detail, but the basic idea is two-dimensional theory can be constructed using lattice, using Kaplan, Unser method. And then, we can add a plane wave deformation for that. That model is also realized on lattice without fine tuning. Then, so we can construct the one brain theory, which is two-dimensional supernovas with the other flux. Then, through Meyer's effect, fuzzy sphere arises. And the fuzzy sphere corresponds to the three brain, which consists of the one brains. And that's a four-dimensional equals to four. And in that way, we can construct a four-dimensional equals to four. And we can argue that we don't need any parameter fine-tuning. That's what I explained tomorrow. And also for this case, there are several other proposals which I cannot explain in these talks. One is large N H-Kawai reduction. So they consider BMN matrix model, which is a matrix model in 0 plus 1 dimension. And they consider very specific fuzzy sphere background in that model. And around that model, that vacuum, at large M, for the N equals to 4 appears. And recently, Heckmann and Fierlinde from Princeton proposed another matrix model, which realized 4 dimensional N equals to 4. And on lattice, these people studied how many fine tunings are needed, and their conclusion is that they don't have to add new terms which doesn't appear in three-level action. But they have to fine-tune coefficients in three-level action. Okay, let's see Suzy matrix quantum mechanics case. So this is digital brain quantum mechanics or matrix model of M theory. So the action is like this. This lambda is two-foot coupling, which has a dimension of mass Q. And this is a dimensional reduction of 4 dimensions to 4, or 3 dimensional equals to 1. So this xi runs from x1 to x9, which corresponds to collective coordinate of the zero plane in spatial dimensions. And there's a gate field inside this, minus 0 to dt. And this psi is a 16 component made on the y spinner in the notation of 10 dimensional gate theory. And this is digital brain effective action, and this is a matrix model of M theory proposed by Van Fischler, Schenk, and Sustein. And also it's a Greek Hopp and Nicolai's membrane matrix theory. And in the context of gauge gravity duality of Mladacena, this actions should be dual to black zero length. And it's very simple, and numerically it's very easier to study compared to APS 5 shift in 4 case. But from stringy point of view, perhaps it is more interesting, I think, than APS 5 shift in 4. And as I have mentioned, matrix quantum mechanics is UV finite. So we don't have to control UV divergence. So there is no fine tuning. And one would say 4-dimensional n equals to 4 is also UV finite. Like in this case, we have to be careful about divergences. The reason is in one-dimensional case, UV finiteness does not rely on cancellation of diagonals. Even when one-dimensional theory does not have supersymmetry, it's UV finite. But in four-dimensional equals to four case, UV finiteness is assured thanks to the cancellation of fermionic contributions and the bosonic contributions. And unless we properly control divergences coming from bosonic part and Fermionic part, we don't have that cancellation. So this case is not that easy, though theory is really fine. But quantum mechanics is really easy, because every finiteness is assured without relying on cancellation. Okay, so we don't have to use lattice. What we do is just fit the cage and introducing momentum cutoff. And numerically, it turns out it's really more efficient than usual lattice method. And what we do is just, so this is a gauge field, and take a static diagonal gauge. You can take another gauge if you want, but for convenience, we choose this gauge. Okay, this gauge field is taken to be diagonal and constant. And this alpha corresponds to, you know, Fleck line phase. And for, because we perform gate fixing, we have a pop of term corresponding to this gate fixing. Then just introduce momentum cutoff. So we pop up by Hebron direction and just expand xi of t using Fourier mode and introduce cutoff for Fourier mode. That's it. Then we have all the finitely many Fourier modes. So we can put it on computer. We can use multiple methods. So simulation itself is, in principle, really easy. Then, what is predicted from gravity side?
So when you do a hard momentum cutoff, you preserve the gauge symmetry?
No.
No.
Gauge symmetry is broken, supersymmetry is broken.
Right, so but now you are fixing it, you shouldn't be worrying.
So what we did is a fixed gauge and then introduce momentum cutoff. And when we remove momentum cutoff, this gauge fixed action is restored. And that should be equivalent to gauge non fixed. Yeah. In fact, we performed the various tests. So for bosonic model, various bosonic model, we checked if gauge symmetry is restored. And also, for simplest solvable supersymmetric theories, we applied this method and observed a restoration of supersymmetry.
Presumably that's because you don't have UV divergences at all.
Yeah. And in fact, if you introduce a really weird cutoff, like an asymmetric one, for example, n equals to minus lambda to 2 lambda, then SUSY is not restored. Because then from Fermionic term, because symmetry between P and minus P is broken, then log divergence can appear from Fermionic part. So we must be a bit careful in fact. And we check it works.
So how do you simulate this then? Do you just use normal metropolis or how do you treat the Fermion part?
So now we only have so also for Fermion, of course, we introduce couple. Okay, so we have a finitely many degrees of freedom. And then we can use metropolis, of course. But because metropolis is really slow, we use the rational hybrid Monte Carlo. And that's very technical, so I can explain later after the talk.
Is the momentum continuous?
No, because to make the theory finite, we introduce higher cutoff. In this case, mainly we are interested in thermal physics. So we compact by temporal direction. So we only have one temporal direction, so we compact by temporal direction. And this second appearance is beta, which is normal. And then, you know, this is not integral, it's just sum, discrete sum. And also, on lattice, of course, to make the number of lattice to be finite, by introducing higher cutoff. It's the same. So basically, in terms of lattice, it corresponds to 2 lambda plus 1 sites.
How large do you need to go in lambda,
so In practice, when we calculate sum of level 4, okay, we plot it in this way. So we calculate sum of level 4 as a function of lambda, and at some point we can extrapolate it to Korobian limit. And based in the unit of lambda equals to 1, for example, down to say vector inverse equals to 0.5 or 0.4, we take lambda to be around 6 or 8. And then, of course, how big lambda we need is observable dependent, but in many cases, this is large enough to allow extrapolation to lambda equals to infinity. So let's see the gravity prediction. So gauge gravity duality conjecture proposed by these people is p plasma dimensional max minus supersymmetric UN nils and type 2 superstring on black p-brain background IP domain. And p equal to 3 kc is 5 shift before. And when p is smaller than 3, geometry in gravity is non-ABS, and the shift field theory is non-shifty. But still, similar correspondence holds, and the large and strong coupling corresponds to supergravity. Finite coupling corresponds to alpha prime correction. Finite n corresponds to G-string correction. And the black p-brain solution is like this. Okay, this is temporal direction. This y is a direction parallel to brain, and this U is a radial direction coming out of brain, and this is spherical directions. And in order for the supergravity description to be good, G-string correction, which is determined by exponential of Jevons, must be small, and also typical curvature scale of the background geometry must be large compared to alpha prime. And the condition turns out that it must be smaller than 1 and it must be larger than 1. Then, in the case of p equals to 0, supergravity is valid when radial coordinate u is sitting in this range. And if you take large n first, it goes to 0. And the difference from ABS shift case is when p is smaller than 3, the fifth coupling lambda is dimensionful. And it sets the length scale of the theory. And that's the fifth coupling, because it's dimensionful, by rescaling fields and coordinates appropriately, we can always take lambda equals to b equals to 1. And we use that unit. So long distance or short distance is measured compared to the length scale set by lambda. Okay, so in the following, long distance means longer than 1. Short distance is shorter than 1. And the Hawking temperature of the D0 brain is written like this. Okay, then if we plug this U0 to here, then when we first take large n, this is simply 0, so we consider only this constraint. Then it will become like this. So this is a dimensionless combination of temperature and Tofu's coupling. Okay, and if this is much smaller than 1, supergravity description is good around the horizon. And the strong coupling, or large lambda, corresponds to small p, low temperature. So the prediction is at low temperature, black hole thermodynamics, and gauge theory thermodynamics should agree. And the dictionary is like this. So in gravity side, there's ADM mass of black hole. That should correspond to energy density in supermills. And in supermills side, we can consider Wilson loop or Polyakov loop. In this case, we have only one compact temporal direction. So we can have only have Polyakov loop winding on temporal direction. And that's the other parameter of the confinement transition. And in gravity side, that can be calculated by measuring the area of minimal surface, which has these loops as boundary. And if we are interested in correlator, this theory is not conformal, but still there are certain open class of operators which behaves, which obeys power law. And that power, or generalized conformal dimension, corresponds to mass of field excitation in gravity side through Gavsa-Krepanov-Polyakov and Wei-Teng prescription. And so we can compare, we can calculate in gauge theory side, in supermill side, and we can compare the result. But there is one technical, not technical, it's really physical issue, which you asked yesterday, I think.
There's a modular, well, flat direction problem.
So this model has flat direction even at quantum level, so where xi and xj commute, because the potential is a commutator square. Okay, this direction does not get any energy, cost any energy. And in four dimension, it's a moduli. In large volume, we can fix it by hand. But in one dimension, and also in two dimension, because of the huge IR fluctuation, we cannot fix the value of this field by hand. This value of scalar fields should be determined dynamically. And it's a very important point, emphasized in famous paper of Banks, Fischer, Schenker, and Sustein. Okay, but supergravity suggests that this model corresponds to black zero blend. But the black zero blend is a bound state of many, many D zero blends, right? And so black zero blend corresponds to this point. All scalar are almost zero. And if the duality is really correct, then in supergravity side, which corresponds to n equal to infinity, there is no instability. So if the duality is really correct at large n, if also in supermill side, this bound state of scalar eigenvalue must be stable. And at finite n, whirlwind correction corresponds to G-string correction in string theory. So from a black hole, closed string can propagate to outside. And that effect becomes stronger when n becomes smaller. And then closed string can be emitted from black hole. In super-emitted picture, it's natural to think that, you know, from this bound state, one eigenvalue runs out and go to infinity. Such a correspondence should be natural. And then we expect at large n, at finite n, there is a instability, which corresponds to Hawking radiation in string theory. And it disappears at large n.
In the instability is, in your original model, your matrix model, I don't see any instability.
So this is the action.
Yeah.
So this is boson quark. Okay. So this is potential now.
Yes.
And when this xi and xj are not commutative, this quark costs energy. Okay. But when they commute, there is no potential at classical level. And even yes, about that interaction. So if we don't have Fermi part, for example.
No, even the pure bosonic one.
Yeah, in pure bosonic one, there is no instability because. So let's expand this action around diagonal background, for example. Then we can integrate out of diagonal modes. Then we can show that the eigenvalues attract each other. So by quantum correction, flat direction, classical flat direction is leaking. Okay, but now we have supersymmetry. Then Fermi contribution coming from this interaction gives a diffusion for scale eigenvalues, and that exactly cancels the contribution from bosonic modes, and flat direction appears. That's really typical in supersymmetric theory. So in this case, there is instability.
Even at finite temperature?
Even at finite temperature, yeah. At finite temperature, cancellation is mild, of course. So there is a very small attractive force, but that's not strong enough to, you know, bound the eigenvalues. You know, once eigenvalues are separated, if they are separated more, they can, entropically, they can such a configuration in favor. And the attractive force coming from interaction is not strong enough to compensate that entropy.
But when you talk about 1 over m corrections, presumably you can do. Is there a way to see that 1 over m corrections actually corresponds to predominantly repulsive force and that there is an instability?
No. Even both in finite n and large m.
Right.
So I said I integrated out of diagonal modes.
Right.
That's justified only when eigenvalues are well separated.
Right.
And once eigenvalues are well separated, we can use one loop analysis.
Right.
And then flat direction appears. But when eigenvalues clump, then that one loop analysis is not valid. And a higher loop or non perturbative contribution may come. And so by hand, I cannot estimate. But this configuration, so whether this configuration is stable or not, cannot be studied by using that one-loop analysis. Mm-hmm. And what I can say is once eigenvalue spread, it just decay. Mm-hmm. And whether it's, whether starting with this configuration, eigenvalue spread or not is not part of the question. But this supergravity prediction should correspond to that non-perturbative timing. And that suggests at finite n, this bound state is not really stable, but it becomes more and more stable, more and more meta-stable if we increase n, and it's really stabilized in the large limit. That's a prediction from supergravity.
A bit hard to interpret black holes in ADS geometry. So sometimes people would say that whatever the black hole we construct is the one that we should consider to be in a thermal equilibrium with its own radiation. So from that perspective, why would I expect that one of our corrections will produce an instability? I mean, there will be, you know, there will be one of our corrections, but those corrections would be both to whatever thermal gas and.
But there's no box here, right?
No box.
Okay.
So it's like radiation.
Okay, right, because it's just zero.
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, in the practical simulation, you really see when eigenvalues start to move away from some eigenvalue jumps, you see like
yes.
It diffuses like a free particle, starts to move away from larger
yes,
and larger.
Yes. So we monitor, for example, trace x I squared divided by n, which is a typical cross-post eigenvalue. And we start from zero, and it first increases and oscillates around some specific value. But at some point, it diverges. Mm-hmm. And we interpret this part
corresponds to black zero range, and take expectation value only using this value, these configurations. And what we see is if we increase n, this lifetime of this metastable state becomes longer and longer.
And can you, when you have this runaway behavior, can you identify that like you lost one eigenvalue and the rest are still staying?
Yes.
Can you?
In principle, yes, but I didn't try.
Not one eigenvalue would make no difference to work on one over n. Very unlikely.
I guess this should be the slope, no? If the slope is like 1 over n or 2 over n, that's here.
It must be proportional to n to survive that n.
But in practice, you know, my eigenvalue, I think in practice all eigenvalues play. But what we observe is this behavior. And as you said, when only one eigenvalue is played, this must be slower.
But if you look at the spectrum of one of the xi's, which you should be able to do,
Yes. What we did is this, because it's numerically easier.
But you could look at the eigenvalue spectrum
of course.
Size.
Of course. Yeah.
Then it would be meaningful to say if someone that if there was leakage to the eigenvalue. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Can it make sense like to try to put it in a box, like to identify axes?
It's possible, but I don't know physical meaning of that box.
No, but the target space, I mean the capital axis.
But would that make any difference? What if your axis would be, compact? Would that make a difference? I mean, in great,
in Hessmann quantification, for example.
Yeah, when you do the simulation, you probably impose periodic boundary conditions on the axis.
No, anti-periodic boundary condition for these temporal axes, and that's the only direction.
No, but axes are just emission
based. Yeah, emission based is this corresponds to transfer.
Pass
direction of the zero range, but not a dimension in the ambience.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, what we actually see is numerically instability media disappears at large n. And also, this instability comes from cancellation due to supersymmetry. So at high temperature, we expect instability is gone. And that's also true. So if we increase temperature or n, instability disappears. So I think this numerical result really suggests this picture is good. And the numerical observation is like this. So as I mentioned, we start with this initial configuration. And then bound state of eigenvalue is metastable. At some point, it can diverge. And this lifetime becomes longer when we increase temperature or n. And the bound state disappears. Bound state appears again at really low temperature. So when we decrease temperature, while fixing value of n, at some point instability appears, but at really low temperature, bound state appears again. If we use SU2, for example, around t equals to 1, bound state disappears, but below t equals to 0.25, it appears again. And it looks a bit strange, but in fact, it's known that fermion zero mode gives attractive force to eigenvalues. And at very low temperature, almost zero mode appears. And I think that thanks to that, metastable state appears again. And if we use periodic boundary condition, we have exact zero mode always. And then this bound state becomes more stable. So I think this light fermion mode really gives attractive false eigenvalues and can make bound state metastable.
I don't understand very well. So I understood the scaling with N, but what happens with the scaling with temperature? Like when, why does it change the lifetime of this data?
So consider high temperature limit. Then fermion has antiperiodic boundary condition, and it has a huge thermal mass. It decouples. It's bosonic scaling. It should be stable. And if we decrease temperature, cancellation of Suzuki gradually emerges, and that gives instability.
So, but on the other hand, at high temperature, entropy fights against you because I'm involved in the
No, but they don't have to. They're affected in the bosonic case. Once the family is decoupled.
At any temperature?
At high temperature.
High temperature.
They decouple, so they're.
And so,
but you could try putting the nasty at temperature, but you could try putting periodic boundary conditions for the fermions as well.
We can try both. And with periodic boundary condition, this bound state becomes more stable. And I think that is thanks to zero volt, which exists in periodic boundary condition.
This is periodic boundary conditions for the fermions, so you're putting in different.
So this statement is for antiperiodic boundary condition. And if we use periodic boundary condition, almost all T, we can find metastable
state. But it's always metastable at finite time.
At finite time, it's always metastable. It's not really stable. So K-Drake relative predicts alien mass, which can be calculated like this, should correspond to energy density in the fermions. So we can compare. So we use n equals to 70. We have to go to larger n to stabilize this bound state. In fact, using, for example, C5 and C8, we cannot go to such low temperature. And this is supergravity. And this is situation result. And these plots really go close to supergravity limit. And here cut off is 6 and 8. And here we didn't see any difference of cut off 6 and 8. And here it's, this seems to be small cut off effect. And by going close to continuum limit, it goes down a little bit. But not that different. And this difference should correspond to alpha prime correction, because you know n equals to 70 is equivalent to infinity. SU3 is already quite large n, so SU70 is infinity. So alpha prime correction should correspond to deviation from strong coupling, or in our case, low temperature limit, right? And alpha prime correction to supergravity in this type 2 setup starts from alpha prime cube order. And correction to, then just by power counting, we can say that correction to the black hole mass should be cubic power of alpha prime divided by Kalajan radius squared. And it corresponds to T 1.8. And 2.8, which is supergravity result, plus 1.8 is 4.6. So we can estimate the power of this correction term, but this part cannot be calculated by hand using today's technology. So, but by thinking we can determine this factor, and it's a prediction by supply-end simulation.
Where did you get the value 1.8 from?
Ah, okay. So we know this R squared. This is alpha prime times some alpha prime, I don't know, temperature, and horizon is related by this relation, and this user is related to R squared times alpha prime. And then, looking at this, going back to this background, we have alpha prime here, and from this, we can calculate curvature radius at horizon. And through this relation, we can translate it to temperature. And then we get this power. So then it turns out alpha prime divided by r squared is t to the 0.6. And we get this
power. Can I ask you a question? So how much you trust this 5.58? Where is the, would you trust 5? The first digit?
So, error bar is 0.03, I think, numerically. But of course,
I mean, there is lots of, you know, because you're doing lattice.
Yes. So I think it's really close enough to continue reading. And the only subtlety is which range we use for the fitting.
I'm not questioning the additional power. What I'm questioning the coefficient, because you can actually
Yes.
That's an interesting question. So we know some set of alpha prime corrections in type 2B supergravity. So there are corrections which are due to symmetric plus, you know, plus the 5 form. And so depending on how much you trust that 5.58, you can in some sense predict. And
yes.
Can be some indication how much we're really missing in our understanding of alpha prime corrections in type 2B supergravity.
And at one sigma, the error is 0.03, so this prediction is 5.58 plus minus 0.03. And but of course, by extrapolation to really, you know, continuum, it may change out to be, but I think plus minus 0.1 at the most.
So your graph showed just n equals 17.
N equals 17, yes.
Right. But it would be nice to see how when it was collapsed, because this is a large n, so you would like to see if.
Okay.
How well is this fit?
But the one way correction appears in powers of 1 by n squared.
But your numerical data, you take an n.
I would say.
If you plus with n equals.
I would say one line correction is not that important, but the next leading alpha prime correction can be more important than one line correction. But if we introduce next leading other terms, we can fit anything. But anyway, to see fitting range, okay. So we can take difference of this relation result and supergravity prediction, and make a local plot. And here we have really nice red line with slope 4.6. And in this range, we can trust the simulation result, I think. So here we have n equal to 14 and 17, and they're not that different. So one-way effect is correct, and I think this deviation comes from a next leading correction of alpha prime, and we fit it in this area, this parameter range, and then error is 0.03.
And that's where your 5.58 comes from.
Yes.
Great. Yeah.
So I think this value is quite convincing. By the way, it's minus. And also we can measure Plekhov loop with the scalar field insertion. Okay, then log of this part should correspond to area of minimal surface. And in fact we have to calculate log of expectation value. That is should correspond to area of minimal surface. But W itself is very large, and error becomes really huge. So we took the expectation value of log W, and it can be justified as large n, really, because one single confirmation dominates. And the passing interval. Okay, then we can calculate the area of minimal surface, which has a product of loop as boundary. And then prediction is log of polyhedral group should behave some factor divided by e to the 0.6. No, sorry. 1.89 divided by e to the 0.6. And there must be some additional constant factor. And this simulation results really obeys this scale. And here we used rather small n and rather low temperature, where metastable bound state appeared again. It's not high temperature region, it's really low temperature region. Because otherwise we couldn't see this scale. So this region corresponds to, you know, this region. Okay, so that we had a metastable state at very low temperature was really nice. And also we can calculate correlation function. And in ADS-CFP, there is a well-known GKPW relation. And similar relation falls in diesel brain theory as well. And sort of conformal dimension in for some kind of operators can be calculated from gravity. And for some class of operators, all t or zero expectation value should behave t. T is this distance between two points to the sum power minus t. And this minus t can be calculable via supergravity. And Sekin and Dionier calculated, in fact. And so the simplest case is this class of operators, J plus, which is defined by a symmetrized trace of commutator of scalar and the scalars. Then they calculated the power, right? And this straight line corresponds to that power. And these circles, triangles, and diamond corresponds to represent the simulation result. And they really simulation result really lies on the straight line with correct power. And there is a deviation at short distance scale. And that's fine because short distance is really coupled region where supergravity analysis is not valid. And here you also see some deviation. But this is in fact beta divided by 2, where finite size effect appears. So the deviation here is also not a problem. And in the intermediate region, we can see really nice scaling. And we can see this agreement already at SU3.
So here you have to use a much larger momentum cutoff.
Yeah, in fact. And lambda equals to 16. And that's the reason why we could study only small. And we can also be the same using SU2. In this case, this J, well, I have shown only two operators because others are trivially zero due to the special property of SU2. But then we can see the same behavior. So already at SU2, for these operators, GKPW is almost exact. So these are the results. And yesterday I explained sign problem. And it seems there is no sign problem for supersymmetric theory. So when we calculated energy density, we looked at T larger than 0.4. that phase is almost always 1, means Hopkin phase is almost always plus 1 or almost always minus 1. Okay? And so in this region, there is no sign problem. And that at high temperature, there is no sign problem, easy to understand because fermions simply decouples. And sign problem is a problem coming from fermion. But it's a bit surprising that there's no phase down to rather low temperature where we can see extreme supergravity behavior. And if we go further low temperature, at some point around equals to 0.3, sign appears. And our simulation is based on phase quench. And it seems phase quench gives a result which agree with the gravity predictions. And also with periodic boundary condition, sign appears. But it, again, phase quench gives a consistent result with supergravity. So that suggests phase quench is good. Okay, and SU2 is a little bit special, both in periodic and anti-periodic boundary condition. For some reason, phase is not exactly 1, but always really close to 1. So the real part is 0.999 or something like that. So for SU2 case, definitely phase quench is justified. And that result is again consistent with SU3, for example. So this and this are consistent. So it's really seems that phase quench works, and there must be some reason. And it's a tentative result, which we put in the appendix of upcoming's paper. Okay, we calculated phase factor against fixed value of some observer. And here, in fact, we calculated only determinant phase. We must calculate Hopkin phase, and we are not trying. But anyway, what we find is, so for fixed value of operator, in this case, size of scalar field, determinant phase has plateaued. And we can also make a histogram against this value. Then only in this region, in an important sampling, only this region appears. Okay, then larger than 3. And in that region, phase is uniform. Ah, by the way, we measured phase at each point by adding almost a delta function like potential for this observer rules to fix the value. Okay, and then so only this part is important when we take expectation value, but their phase is almost constant.
Sorry, why did you add a delta function for that? You could just run the simulation and add this.
Then we don't see any configuration here.
Ah,
okay. Yeah, so that's the reason. Okay. So here, in fact, I know the phase quench result and the rebating result. And it's really easy to see that if expectation value of phase for fixed observable value is constant, phase quench is exact. Because, so this is a basic formula of rebating model. Okay, then this value can be calculated like this. So this law of x is a density function of trace of x squared to take. But x, so this histogram. Okay, then this quantity is an integral of x times phase factor at fixed x with this weight. But this is constant, where this log of x is not zero. So let's call that constant to be c. Then we can take c out of this integral. And this is exactly phase quench. Expectation value of the x squared. So this just half like this, they cancel. And the phase quench simulation is exact also. So numerically we can see phase point is exact because thanks to this plateau structure. But for the moment I don't know why such pattern can appear. I asked the data supply if he believes such can happen, and he says with maximum symmetry anything can happen. You know, that's a most beautiful theory where we can believe any kind of miracle. But I want to understand why that. At present, it's just a miracle. Okay, so it's the final part.
So, sorry, I guess, can we go back? I guess I missed one more. So when the phase is almost constant, then you know the phase quench you know is a well defined procedure, right? But when the phase is close to zero, like on the even previous transparency, yeah. So why are you saying that? I would say that. Well, I guess what the word important means. In that case, the phase to the right of the. Of the red line, the phase quench calculations is well defined, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to the left, it's not good because the phase is close to zero.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
And but what happens is in important sampling, this region never appears. So still you can. So what we can say is so in this plot, this part, phase translation due to phase is really huge.
Mm-hmm.
And also, first of all, there is no sample, so it doesn't contribute at all.
Okay.
So if we have different pattern, here phase is larger and here it is small,
mm-hmm.
then we are in trouble.
Right.
Right.
Why do you say that? I mean, the problem with the phase cancellation is if the phase goes all the way around, so if the cosine can be anything, right?
If this is the expectation value, expectation value of cosine at fixed observable value. So phase itself is fractal.
So, but this error bar is not, I see.
Yeah, so, error bar is rather small in this case.
I see, the phase is really fluctuating a lot.
Yeah.
Because I thought before you said that the phase when you measure is always...
At high temperature region, yes.
Only at high temperature.
And at a low temperature, phase starts to fluctuate. But even at low temperature, we have such miraculous pattern.
Right.
Okay. Which justify phase quench.
The fact that the average is constant is not good enough. You need to.
In what sense? Not enough.
You know. Why don't you plot the variance of the fluctuation? How much the fluctuation? A measure of how much they fluctuate would be better than the average, no?
No. In this calculation, only average appears, so no problem.
Because. But if you're going to measure another observable, then you have to...
Then we have to measure this, make this plot again by changing this axis.
Right.
And it's really observable dependent.
As you said, it's just a miracle. You have been lucky that values that arise at low temperatures are such that the phase is almost constant, even though it's not.
So do you think the miracle is observable dependent, or that phase quench will work for all observables?
It must observable dependent. For example, if we apply phase quench for phase itself, it doesn't work.
Right, so he is.
And this is the final part, which is most important but still in progress. It's about one-of-one correction. If one-of-one correction fully describes stringy and theoretic collections, then, according to its table, okay, so after first we are our system corresponds to black zero brain in 10-dimensional space, and by fixing them we decrease the temperature. Then it goes to strong happening, and close to the horizon, 11th dimension appears. So this black hole in 10-dimensional space becomes something like black string in 11 dimension. And then if we go to further strong coupling or further low temperature, this compact five dimension becomes larger. Then at some point it pinches off, liquid diaphragm transition takes place, and we have 11 dimensional black Schwarzschild black hole. That's what they say. Then, if that's true, then Schwarzschild black hole must have negative specific heat. And we try to calculate energy at very low temperature using phase quench approximation. Then we really have a negative specific heat. And we can estimate a leading correction, leading the next leading correction to supergravity limit. And it's some constant times t to 0.4 divided by n squared plus some constant times t to the minus 2.6 divided by n to the fourth. And plus da 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 da. And we can actually fit this plot by using two parameters. And a friend of mine calculated this quotient A. I don't follow his calculation yet, but he says the value should be minus 5.7, which is close to our fitting. So it's still tentative, and you know, because this state is just metastable, it's not easy to precisely determine the energy. And of course, Schwarzschild black hole is not stable, so it's really hard to determine. It's a related question. But now we are trying to make a simulation more precise. But tentative result is very promising.
How could the error be smaller for a sublimating partition for B?
This one?
Yeah. How could it be smaller than for it?
Yeah, because this is almost constant, right? So this it has this t is really small. Okay, so if you change B a little bit, this changes huge amount. So this quick increase of energy is almost determined by this part. And this part has only tiny contribution. So that's the reason why this coefficient B is really sensed, precisely determined, while A is only poorly evaluated. So, you know, T to the 0.4 is almost constant. It cannot explain this quick increase of the energy. So this is a summary. So, Monte Carlo is purple. And strong coupling and supergravity is very well, of course, already. Everybody believes it. And finite coupling versus alpha prime correction is also fine. And I think many people more or less believe in these things. And one-line correction versus G-string correction is promising, I think. And at this stage, some people think gauge gravity duality is correct. Somebody thinks gauge gravity duality can fail at this stage. So it's really important to precisely evaluate one-line correction in super-end site and check or reject gauge gravity duality. And tomorrow I will explain how 2, 3, and 4 dimensional supernovae can be studied on computer. That's it.
Can you go back to the previous slide? I didn't understand what was the supergravity interpretation of these corrections? These are.
It's a string equation, G string equation. So it's a proportional to 1 over squared and 1 over n to the 4.
So it's shifting the mass of the Schwarzschild black hole first. How do you compute that? What did your friend do?
Okay. So this question, so Schwarzschild black hole itself is far more than what I think. And how it can be evaluated is around supergravity, you know, we can expand the action in terms of alpha prime and G-string. Okay, and in this case, we took into account all the leading order in alpha prime and the zeroth order of G-string. And this time we also take into account the higher order of alpha prime and G-string. Okay, and extract the information. But it turns out because it's very low temperature, higher order in alpha prime has a larger power of T. But because T is really large, that part is can be neglected.
I guess that's what you're asking. Because he fixes lambda to be equal to 1. Because that's why effectively one of the G-string collections develop a temperature dependence.
Ah, okay, that's your question. Okay, okay, I understand.
You are asking, see, it shifts by 2.6.
So this T is not really one dimensionless effective temperature, which is related to Hawking temperature in this way. So.
And G string is inside.
Yeah. And this lambda, strong coupling and low temperature, really the same. And so very low temperature is really strong coupling. And that coupling constant is related to radius of 11th dimension in the interpretation by Witten. And so if we go really strong coupling, 11th dimension start to expand.
Okay, so in this case, G-string corrections are larger than alpha prime. So like L Planck is actually.
Yeah, and
bigger,
in this specific region, in superimpedance, alpha prime correction is larger than, smaller than G-string correction. So this is a G-string, first, lowest order in alpha prime, and bleeding order in G-string. Yes. This is a G-string square times some lowest power of alpha prime.
So your friend can compute one loop string correction.
I thought that you can. I have to understand his logic.
Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be done in X theory, or in string theory. Is this correction or done in N theory or in string
theory? Yeah, N theory, yes.
So you need like the correction to the 11 dimensional supergravity coming from M theory. So
you are saying that presumably that's just the supergravity corrections in N theory.
Yeah,
but
so it's never
correct.
Yeah.
No, but it's 1 over n squared, so it must be the correction.
But in
that
theory, there's no
G
string.
So by M theory, what do you mean? Yeah. So M theory is really, really strongly coupled region here. And it's closer to supergravity region.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you go further low temperature, it should go to chemical region.
Ah, so you mean here it is still type 2A?
Yeah, type 2A plus some small correction.
Mm-hmm.
In this plot around here.
By the way, why did you stop then? Why did you stop?
Yes, because we have to take n to be larger to stabilize, and we have to take lambda larger, and that's very costly.
As you
so we can go to lower temperature if you give me money.
How does money scale?
You know, calculation cost is n to the 6. Yeah, and in this business, there are two important things. Large N limit and large M limit. N means matrix size and M means money. And in large M limit, we can do anything.
No, 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 no.